So glad everybody's here. Do you want to go right ahead?
Good to see you. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
So we are going to get ourselves started here. Just wanted to make sure everybody's got coffee, bottle of water that you might need. We're going to work real hard with a real, I think, good, meaty session, okay? This is the third session for the Senate Bill 441 working group, and we appreciate those who are here. So what we're going to do is I'm going to turn this over to Mary Ann. We're going to incorporate kind of our introductions with a question that Mary Ann has, so we want everyone to participate today, all right? We really hope to hear from each of you. And again, appreciate you being out on a very rainy day that looks at least like it's coming. Slick, maybe. And those of you who traveled in, I appreciate you doing that. So I know we still have a few people coming, and please take seats. We can avoid the back row. We've got lots of open tables. So that's you, Janine. And there is a table right near you, Janine. All righty. Okay, so Joy Hoffmeister, State Superintendent, glad to welcome everybody here. We'll get this show on the road, and I'll turn it over to Mary Ann.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So first question, who's here for the first time? Anybody? One. All right. One, two, okay. Is anybody else here for the first time? You didn't go to meeting one or two? Okay, because I've got a couple repetitive slides, but we'll go through those, and we'll get to the meat of this soon. So just to give you a quick overview of what we're doing today, we'll do a quick review of the legislation that brought us here. Reminder that our job is to provide input as stakeholders on the guidelines for student performance. We're going to go through what we did last meeting, where we ended up, and I'm going to bring you more data, which I know you're all psyched about, but I'll bring you more data on what these guidelines mean. Then I'm going to turn it over to Carolyn to talk about financial considerations, and we're going to talk about the sausage making, but what happens from here for the official rulemaking. But we're going to end up with some, hopefully, consensus on the guidelines. So as the superintendent said, what I would like to do is start with introductions. So for those of you who don't know me, I am Mary Ann Perry. I work for a small consulting firm, but I chair your technical advisory committee here in the state. I've been on it since 2012, and we had a meeting this week. So we've spent the last couple of days talking about the science assessment, the results in the state, looping science assessment into your accountability, adding in the additional year for the graduation rates. How does that affect your accountability? What's going to happen when third graders go online? So we've had some rich discussions the last couple of days, and I asked two of my TAC members to come with me today. I wanted to get a viewpoint from someone that had not been here the last couple meetings, has not been immersed in this the way both at SDE and me and most of you here have been, that we're thinking about this night and day, and see, get their reflections. They also have different backgrounds than I do and work with different states, so to say, what do you think about the direction we're going? So I'll let each of you introduce yourself. Gary?
Good morning. Thanks for having us. My name is Gary Cook. Can you hear me? Okay. I'm Senior Director of Assessment for the WEDA Consortium. I'm also an Associate Research Scientist at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research. WEDA is a consortium of 40 states or federal entities that administers the same English language proficiency assessment, which you use in this state, as well as standards, research, and professional learning across those 40 states or entities. For English learners, sorry. Hello, yeah, that is kind of important.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Juan DeBrat. I'm a senior associate with the National Center for the Improvement of Educational Assessment, or Center for Assessment for short. My organization does a lot of technical assistance for both, really like where policy, operations, and technical issues kind of intersect. And we've covered, I think, quite a few states across the country. I think we're currently working actively with about 35 of them. And we work with several partnering organizations that tend to collect states around common issues. So hopefully we'll be able to bring our perspective to this and kind of help share some feedback about what's going on across the country.
And Department of Ed. Yes.
Hi. Good morning. Brad Clark. I serve as General Counsel.
Carolyn Thompson, Deputy Chief of Staff and Chief of Government Affairs at the Department.
I'm Maria Harris, and I serve as the Executive Director of Accountability.
Hi, I'm Brian Kerner. I work as a data analyst.
Steffi Corcoran, I'm the Communications Director for the State Department.
Is there anybody else from the Department of Ed before we go? Okay.
Gibson, Executive Assistant for Chief of Staff.
Not going to introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm Marty Paul, Director of Media Production.
Anybody else from Department of Ed? Okay, so as we introduce ourselves, I'm going to ask each of you to answer this question in the purple box, which is, what are you hoping we will discuss today that we have not mentioned or given sufficient attention to in the first two meetings? Is there anything that you're sitting there going, they still haven't talked about X? And for those of you that are new, what are you hoping to hear today? What are you here for? What are you hoping to learn? So you get to start, Bill.
Bill Flanagan, Mayor of Claremore, and I'm also a certified public accountant, practiced 40 years, and I'm also on the State Board of Education. Question I got is, what's the timing and what's the execution of the standards? Is it timing immediately or is it a timing a lagger? So,
Janine Barnett with COSA, and I'm interested in seeing the impact data as we look at the different options.
Hunter Zerli, Oklahoma State Chamber Research Foundation, Oklahoma Achieves, and I'm just here to learn. So,
Diana Jackson, I'm a retired educator, 35 years in. I still want to look at the overall progress and overall health and concern of the kids. I still want to focus on, hear more and focus on what's going to happen with the kids. You want to go across or how?
Oh, I got one. Is it on? Oh, okay. Well, I'm Erin Horton. I'm a graduate student from Oklahoma State University, and I am working at Special Education Resolution Center. Since they were invited here, she invited me to come see what's going on. So here I am, and I'm interested to see what the impact is.
Jeremy Ramsey, Assistant Superintendent for Okmulgee. I'm just kind of waiting to see some more data on the impact of the decision that we do make as well on test scores and other data and the criteria.
I'm Renee Dove, superintendent with Okmulgee Public Schools, and I'm interested in knowing the impact of what this will do for our students and of all subgroups and how this will impact them.
My name is Evan Brown. I work in the governor's office, and I'm looking forward to see what we do here continues to make our state competitive in our region. And how it ultimately impacts what goes on in the classroom to create a better education for our kids. So,
I'm Missy Berry, and I'm from Granite. We are a four-day week. I've been teaching for 17 years, and I have a two-part question. Is one, which I could be wrong, it's happened before, the criterion that's going to be based around the monetary savings. How much are you going to have to prove that you saved and things like that? If it's going to be percentage-wise or staff-wise, if you're saving jobs or, you know, whatever criteria we're going to put on that. And this really isn't a question so much, but I feel like that what hasn't been mentioned a whole lot is how some of the guidelines that we have somewhat set are more stringent than 5-day weeks are going to have to deal with themselves. So what I'm saying is, I feel like some of the stuff that we've set is going to create obstacles for 4-day weeks that are actually doing better than some 5-day weeks that in turn do not have to jump through any hoops.
I'm Dwayne Pemberton, Senator, District 9. That's Muskogee and Cherokee County. I just look forward to continuing the progress we've had the last couple of meetings and come to some decision today and something we can move on to the State Department of Education and back to the legislature.
Okay, I'm Dr. Randy Randleman. I'm a licensed psychologist and also state representative for District 15. I've been a teacher, a counselor, a principal, a special ed person in a school, and through my experience, through 42 years, we've worked with a lot of behavior problems in schools. So we contract with schools. If you have a behavior problem or if a kid says he's going to blow up the school or kill the teacher, we come in and do those evaluations. The thing that I would like to see here is that looking at where we judge the four-day week schools, do we make their criteria up at a medium level, or should that be more down, like it's a lower D or somewhere where we judge that?
Hi, I'm Katie Fitzgerald. I'm from the Regional Food Bank of Oklahoma, and I missed the second meeting, so I'm here to learn and catch up and contribute in any way that we can. We support about 800 schools in the 53 counties we serve in central and western Oklahoma with food for children and families who are struggling economically. So I always will bring a lens of equity to the discussions we have, make sure that all children really have the resources they need to succeed.
I'm Emily Crouch with the State Chamber of Oklahoma. I missed the last meeting as well, so hoping to just learn and catch up on what was talked about.
Good morning. I'm Representative Rhonda Baker from House District 60. I am in good company because I missed the last meeting as well. So, yes, I am playing catch up a little bit, but I am looking forward to the guidelines that we're going to put into place. I'm hoping that we will make sure that the four-day school weeks come away from this meeting with some comfort about what we've been able to put together here so that they do not feel attacked. I think I definitely am reading that from Missy's comments. So I'm looking forward. I think that there is a pathway that we can reach to get there, and so I'm hoping today's the day.
Thank you. Matt Failing, private practice attorney and education advocate in Noble. My concern is the socioeconomic impact of the four-day week for marginalized and at-risk students and the impact of it has on local communities.
Hi, I'm Gauri. I come from Oklahoma City Public School, and I'm teaching it right now in the St. Anthony's Hospital for middle school to high school. My main thing is I see all these intellectual, good-looking, well-dressed, so I have to dress myself and put up heels in the morning. It was not easy to walk, I realized. My main thing is I want to learn something from y'all. I'm teaching here in Oklahoma City Public School past 20-plus years, and I taught in Washington, D.C. too. But main thing is I want to see some difference because all you people are very... Everything I said before. I went to a funeral last week during my lunchtime, and it was Thelma Parks, 96 years old. And the same day, my husband is an OSU fan, so he support Boom Pickens. My main thing was Thelma Parks. She made a difference in this state. And most of these teachers are making difference. So I supported more for Thelma Parks to go all the way to her funeral for 10 minutes. Thank you.
I'm Barbara Bowersox. I'm an oil and gas attorney in Oklahoma City, and I'm a resident of the Oklahoma City Public School District. Back in 2016, I asked the then superintendent when they were going to look at the impact of the financial impact of starting school on August 1st. In a time when the Saudi Arabia leadership was taking our oil and gas business into an economic war, and we all saw that oil went down to $26 a barrel, and we know the impact that that had on our state. I've raised that calendar issue several times, and I hope that we address the peak utility rates of August and September versus the non-peak utility rates of May. I also hope that we look at concurrent testing windows for our grades 3 through 8 and our AP courses, we have a disparate impact on students throughout the state who are educated in K through 12 schools that offer AP courses versus K through 8 districts which do not, and in their school year right after the testing window that ends in April. The AP testing is in the middle of May, and so those school districts do not have the same amount of instructional hours before testing, so I hope that we give that some consideration. The other point, and I'm sorry that I didn't made it more than one, is all the districts that have opted to do this extended hours under subsection G, I would like to know if they have really presented to their boards the student achievement data that they're supposed to for their boards to determine, shall they revoke the extended hours? That's in the statutes. It's mandatory. Thank you.
Well, I'm Pat Potts, Potts Family Foundation, and we haven't even talked, but my big issue is that I see if we want to be a top 10, the need for an extended school year, and I think as part of that, it would mean more financial benefits to those schools that are willing to do that and tracking of the difference that makes with the shorter summer for kids that are in that learning gap period. And I guess the other thing I have a concern about is when you have the extended day, so you can do a four-day week, what happens to the little children who don't have the stamina and attention span needed to maximize that longer day?
Matt Posey, superintendent at Oulton Schools. One thing I'm interested to see is what our final guidelines will be in evaluating the 4 and 5 day school weeks, and then also maybe engage in a discussion on why even discuss a waiver when we're looking at doing a mandatory 165 days. I mean, why even look at discussing that option?
Krista Burden, Bristow Public Schools. I'm the same with Matt, talking about 165 days. It'll make it much easier on us if that's a minimum number of days that's just mandated, and then you determine from there if you're going to go 4 or 5 days. Rather than a waiver be in place to go below that with our teachers that, you know, we're having to justify that with them on what that decision even is. And then also if we are, we talked last time about the site being identified by each individual site instead of a district, if you were going to be able to get a waiver. And I just really feel strongly that that is not doable for districts, period. So, and I know that we still haven't addressed anything with, like, we have a pre-K2 site and what the accountability would be there for them. Their only measure of accountability is the chronic absenteeism. So how that would be measured if it is going to be individual sites.
Okay. I agree with you. I'm Mona Schmitz from Woodward. I'm in my 36th year of teaching this year, well, for third grade. This year I'm a Title I interventionalist with instructional coaching, and I hope that whatever the steps that we take will be fair and doable for all the schools.
John Hazel from Durant, 37-year educator. Two things. First of all, I'd like to see the narrative include the admission. I know part of it has kind of been an embarrassment, even though it hasn't been said. But, you know, we started the four-day weeks out of necessity for problems that we were having, but there have been some unforeseen benefits that have arisen from that, and I would like to see that recognized, that, you know, that we need to make that admission. There have been some good things that have come from that. Secondly, I don't know if I misspoke last time, but I made a point about the legislature. I don't think they can do this, but I'd also like to see an opportunity or a chance. Like I said before, the data that we've seen so far has shown that the four-day weeks really have not affected the kids' performance as much as the long extended summer break. And if a school on its own could offer a 10-month calendar where they did start the 1st of August and then they went all the way through May, and then the state allowed them to do those 1,080 hours however they want to in those 10 months, that would make it very easy, and they wouldn't have to go through all that kind of stuff, and they would meet all the criteria, the four-day weeks that don't hurt the kids and the lack of a long summer break. It would just be an option, maybe, that a school could be given, and that would save a whole lot of trouble with a lot of this if they're willing to do that.
Good morning.
Oh, go ahead.
I,
saw you with your hand up. My name is Estella Hernandez, and I'm a board member to the State Department of Education. So I actually missed the last meeting, but I was here for the first one. And one of the things that stood out to me, and really what the data that we have seen, is that summer slide. And I'm seeing a common statement out of many of you how important it would be to be able to extend the school year and truly seeing what's going to be in the best interest of the children. Whether it's the four, then we need to be able to adjust that school year to be able to avoid some of that summer slide. So I'm here to learn from you, but at the same time, I want to be able to take away that we're taking measures and steps that will truly solve the situation that we're in and be able to help our teachers and be of support of what decisions are made in this room.
Don Ford with Rural Oklahoma Schools, 40 years of education. I'm here to see what hoops you're going to make our schools jump through if they decide to do the waiver. I am here to make sure that we consider this is local control. Each district should be able to decide on their own. They have an elected board. So let them decide what they need to do for their district, and it should be district-wide. It should be up to them what they want to do in their district.
Good morning. I'm Marcy Mack, State Director at Oklahoma Career Tech, and I was unable to be here last time, so I'm interested to learn the data conversation and see the report outs there. So at the end of the day, when we look at this, what is the impact not only to the student but to the teachers as well and that community for which that school district serves as we look at our different communities. Each community has its own characteristics, and to see what we put in place, to see what that impact is at the local level. So I'm interested to learn what comes out today.
My name is Jacqueline Walsh, and I'm here on behalf of OPSRC, and I just want to see the final language and make sure that it shakes out to where all the concerns have been legitimately addressed.
Good morning. My name is Jan Lee Rallett. I am here on behalf of Secretary of Agriculture Blaine Arthur. So this is a little bit outside of our wheelhouse, but really just here to listen. She was asked to participate in the task force, and knowing that there is some overlap in what happens in our rural schools and our agriculture industry, so just here to listen and offer whatever input we can. Thank you.
David Morrow, Superintendent of Bridge Creek Public Schools. When this started, not the work group, but the four-day school week shortened calendar, the issue was around state dollars for education. And if schools do not meet the guidelines that are set forth, there will be an increase of operational dollars for those schools. And this won't be answered by this group, but it would be interesting to see if operational dollars follow the next budget cycle for schools.
Frank Solomon, Superintendent of Noble Schools. We're also on a four-day week. As Representative Baker indicated in her comments earlier, yes, there is venom. There's no doubt the whole thing started with venom to change the perception, because we go to a four-day week and therefore it makes our state look bad. That's been the narrative on all sources of media. You know, we didn't ask for this situation. When you have to go to your staff each month and say, hey, we got another revenue cut. Hey, we got another revenue cut. Hey, we got another revenue cut. What are you supposed to do? So we took a bad hand, met with our community, met with our board, met with our employees, and made a decision to try this to see if it would work. As John has pointed out also, there are benefits that have happened that we didn't even expect to happen. You know, the transportation formula was adjusted, as I understand, last in 1983. Is that correct? I spent $1.32 million last year in transportation costs, and my state reimbursement was $107,000. I'm a very rural district. I run 21 routes four times a day. Obviously, that's going to cost me more if I go back to a five-day. Today, we have 123 kids that are out on activities. We have volleyball and softball tournaments. We also play a night game tonight in football. So band, cheer, pom, and football, along with their 11 coach sponsors, would have had to get out early today in order to get there in time. We are seeing a huge difference in how that's affecting us. We also do a third meal for our kids because we're on a longer school day. We start at the beginning of August. We get out at the end of May. We go more days than most, not most, than some five-day districts now. Our summer slide is not the same as everyone else. All I'm asking for is the chance. We are a community that's unique, but we have been able to solve our issues through a variety of factors, and I just want to know that myself and my local board have the ability to make a decision on what we feel is best for Noble Schools.
Melanie Howe, Superintendent, Newcastle Schools. Since the focus of this group is to work out the criteria for the waiver, and we've already spent some time talking about that, I'd like to hear a little bit from the State Department about what they think the steps will be for schools to file the waiver. What will that back-end accountability look like for schools?
Kevin Heim, Superintendent at Clinton. Being this is my first meeting, I'm really here just to listen and try to get caught up on everything that's gone on.
Chris Sharkey, Director of Special Services for Walton Public Schools. And my big thing was just for the review of the criteria for high school. I know we discussed it briefly at the last meeting, but I just don't recall all the criteria for the high schools.
John Talley, Payne County District 33, State Representative. And pretty much everything has been said that I'm here for.
Rick Goen, board member, North Rock Creek, board member, State School Board Association. I'd kind of like to know, hear more about what impact we're looking at this will have on our students. How's it going to help in our teacher retention and attracting teachers? And then I'd also like to hear from the legislators, what are they expecting and what kind of changes could we expect when this thing goes across the street into their hands? Because they invariably will change somehow. They manage to change everything. So.
Sean, I'm Executive Director of the Oklahoma State School Boards Association. I'm interested in seeing the impact data on the schools, also our discussion on the financial savings piece that's part of the law. And now, more importantly, in 47 years, I've never seen Kevin Heim sit and listen, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Cecilia Robinson Woods, I'm superintendent at Millwood Public Schools. I'm just interested in this rival between Kevin and Sean. That's why I'm here. I think along the lines of what we haven't given attention to, and just because we haven't arrived to that, is what this waiver is going to look like and how we can work to make sure that we're not being punitive or asking more of these the districts that are currently on four-day weeks that we would ask for a five-day district.
Did we miss anybody else who came in late and snuck into a place that had already gone through the microphone passing? Oh, okay. Phil.
I am Phil Backrack. I'm Chief of Staff here at the department, and here's Marianne.
Anybody else? All right, thank you. I took three pages of notes. I'm pleased to say a lot of this is going to be is already in our agenda and taken care of today. Some of it will be this afternoon, so be a little patient on stuff about finance, on what happens next about the rulemaking, about the timing for when it goes to the legislature. I can't answer what the legislature will do, but we can turn it over to somebody, maybe talk about what happens then. But we do have a lot of this in here. A lot of data I'm going to show you. Some of the things about impacts on teachers, impacts on specific students, impact on disadvantaged, underserved students, we're going to need to bring out in the conversation. That's not directly in the slides, but we'll bring that out. So thank you for all of that, and I'll keep checking back in my notes as we go through this. So here's one answer to one of the timing questions.
So this bill came through, was passed in May, but it's starting with school year 21-22. Okay, so it's not, what are we in, 19-20. Not this year, not next year, but the year after that is when this goes into place. But of course, that means if it does affect any of our schools that have to change their calendar, they're going to need to start thinking about it very soon. There are two options the way the law is written. You can just select 180 days, the day option. If you go to the hours option, then you have to show 180 hours with a minimum of 165 days. So people that were here last time know I tried very hard to move the conversation away from 4-day versus 5-day into 165 days or more or less than 165 days. Because there is a way to keep schools at 4-day school weeks and be 165 days. You get only get 10 weeks off a year, but you get to figure out how that works. So we're going to keep it there, although certainly the impact I want to talk about with 4-day versus non-4-day. But the overall focus of the law is on the number of days, not the number of days in a week. So again, our main purpose is to really provide input on guidelines for student performance that would exempt districts from the minimum requirement. This is the Section H of the bill. So we've been talking about all these different kinds of variables we have available to us, and we're going to, again, identify areas of consensus to be considered in the draft guidelines. As I said, I learned more this past couple of weeks about what happens in this whole rulemaking process. So there's a lot that's going to happen after we finish today that we'll talk about towards the end of the meeting. So, and just to give you an idea of the general goal for today is I'm hoping that we really kind of finish up on the academic side of the guidelines, the student performance side, by lunchtime. And then we'll spend the afternoon focusing on the finance side, because a lot of you mentioned we've not talked about that, and you're absolutely right. And I'm going to sit down at that point, because finance is not my area. But we're going to talk about finance, and we're going to talk about the rulemaking process after lunch. But let's go back to catch all of you up who missed the second meeting. We went through all of the guidelines a little bit more specifically. And by the way, there's going to be slides on here like you've seen in the past that I'm going to be updating throughout the meeting. So we'll send it out to you after the end of the meeting with the updated slides. Okay? We did have a conversation last time about student groups, about disadvantaged student groups. Do we want to look at any student group needs to meet the target? Do we want to look at economically disadvantaged, race, ethnicity, students with disabilities, English language learners? The decision was we would focus on the classifications of what we call targeted student improvement and additional targeted student improvement. So correct me if I get this wrong, Maria. Targeted student improvement is, well, I'm just going to give this to you. I'm not going to try.
just define TSI and ATSI. Okay, so the difference, so TSI will be the first year next. Okay. So TSI will not be designated until next year because it has to be a 3-year average. Sorry. Okay. Good. Okay. So TSI is based off of a 3-year average of school report card information. And that's why we can't designate until next year when we have 3 years of report cards. Okay. It's based off of the underperformance, a consistently underperforming group across a 3-year average in 2 or more indicators. Okay. Where ATSI, we designated for the first time this year. So if you remember, right after the release of the report cards in February, we designated CSI. Okay, I have to define CSI before I can get to ATSI. CSI, we basically rank ordered schools, okay? And we looked at the bottom 5%, that fifth percentile. And we looked at the cut point of what it was to make a school eligible to be in the bottom 5%, okay? We take that cut point, the fifth percentile, on all schools, and we apply it to all of your subgroups, okay? So we can see if there's any subgroups that's underperforming with that fifth percentile. So we have to use the cut from CSI, and we use it in ATSI. So if any subgroup is below that cut on their own, they are ATSI designation, additional targeted support and improvement, where TSI is targeted support and improvement, a 3-year average, and 2 or more indicators. Is that clear? I know it's confusing, so
But yeah, the point, but we, I'm sorry.
I just want to add, so just for those who are not familiar with federal law, all of what was described are part of federal designations, federal law. So the idea is for those federal requirements, they are seated in the civil rights of students in protected groups. Those include our children in poverty, English learners, those with special education disabilities, and race ethnicity categories, specific minorities. So that is something that is uniform with every state and is in alignment with federal law and will always be a part of whatever school accountability system is going to be in Oklahoma from this point on, because that started in 1965 with the civil rights law of ESEA, which is the overarching umbrella law of student federal law.
Yep, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, ESEA. So our conversation last month was that this ATSI-TSI designation really focuses on where are the schools where they have a student group who is very much underperforming, either at the very bottom on one indicator or in the bottom on multiple indicators, closer to the bottom of the multiple indicators. So that is what what we decided that was how we were going to make sure that any school that was going below 165 days was not causing undue harm to kids in our protected groups. Okay, so that, hey, I'm only on the first bullet. We really split out the elementary middle schools and the high schools and looked at them separately because the elementary middle schools have growth and high schools do not have a growth measure right now because we only test schools once in high school. So we need two pieces of data to have growth and we only have one. So, but we looked at the growth for elementary and middle, and one thing we had a discussion about and just left it as Marianne bring us some numbers, was we've got ELA and math. We're going to focus on those two subjects. Should you meet the minimum growth requirements for ELA and math, meaning minimum growth for ELA and minimum growth for math, or do we put them together and say, once you put them together, you need to meet the overall minimum growth, meaning if I'm doing pretty well in ELA and slightly worse in math, but it averages out, I'm okay. So we're going to talk about that today.
English Language Arts.
Yes, ELA. Sorry. ELA, English Language Arts. We talked about graduation rates for high school. We did decide we just wanted to stick with the four-year graduation rate. Just keep it simple. Don't worry about 5 and 6 year, but four-year graduation rate. And that we wanted to keep the four-year graduation rate above the state average. And then we had this long discussion about, well, what if the state average drops? Is it okay for the schools asking for a waiver for them to drop as well? And we decided, no, it either needs to be above the current state average or above the state average today, which is 82.3. So that became an or statement. If the graduation rate keeps going up in the state like it has been, then we want to be above the state average. But if for some reason it drops, we want to be above where the state average was today. We also talked about post-secondary indicators that certainly... I'm sorry. That's when things are going to finalize today.
About the graduation rate? Okay. Yeah, that'll be on the discussion later.
So at or above?
On graduation or for everything else? Oh, yeah, we're not on that yet.
Yeah, yeah, no, these are what we agreed that I would run numbers on. So this is still, the word possible is still there. But these were the ones we agreed I was going to bring you data back on, basically. So I was just trying to remember. I think I did run all the data as at or above the state average. I think that's how I ran it. Okay, where am I? Post-secondary indicator. So we had a discussion about one of the... benefits of fewer number of school days, whether it's 4 day or 5 day, is it should give students, particularly high school students, more opportunity, a greater number of days where they could do something outside of school that prepares them for post-secondary, whether it be dual enrollment, whether it be an internship, whether it be taking an online AP course, something, that ought to be a benefit. So we wanted to include that as an indicator for high schools. But we couldn't decide how, so I've run data two ways. One is it above the state average, or is it just not an F? You can't be an F on this indicator. Or is it the percentage of kids that are doing something, and it's just the something. It's not, we didn't look into which one. But are your kids doing something? Is every kid doing something? What percentage of kids are doing something? Is that percentage of kids above the state average? Finally, we started a conversation on achievement, and that's one I'm going to revisit, and I'll explain that in a few minutes. But here's where we ended up. So this is what I started working with, if everybody can see that, with the calculations that I've been running the past 3 weeks. So growth value for elementary middle. Again, I looked at it both ways. What if we say growth, you have to meet growth for ELA and for math separately, or the combination. Can't be an F school, can't be a CSI school, can't be, not issue yet, but you can't be a TSI school, an issue, you can't be ATSI. High schools, minimum graduation rate, well, since the state average is 82.3, the OR goes away this year. And then minimum post-secondary opportunities, I looked at both above an F, or just not an F, or above the state average. And then the same criteria there. Okay, so here's where I'm going to hit some of the questions. First hit some of the questions you guys raised, because you ended the meeting hitting me with a couple questions I couldn't answer. So I got answers for you. What about early childhood? So like a PK2 school. One thing I am going to correct, you could also have ELPA data in a PK2 school. So you could possibly have two indicators. So if you have data that has already put you in an ATSI group, that's going to move you out, meaning your kids are doing at the bottom 5% in that group. That's already moved you out. Otherwise, the PK2 rule is you'll have the same designation as the school you feed into. So if you're, most of the schools I saw that were PK, and I'm saying PK2, but it could be PKK, it could be PK1, it could be K3, whatever that we don't have enough real indicators for. If the feeder, the school it feeds into, so if it's a PK2, feeds into a 3-5. If the 3-5 school meets all the criteria, the PK2 school meets all the criteria. Okay? So it's just, it gets the designation of its feed, of the school it feeds into. Does that make sense? Okay. And I said it's true for all these combinations.
Does anyone object to that?
Well, I have a question.
Yes. Let's go ahead since we're recording. Thank you.
Is there a circumstance that in these districts that are doing this where a PK2 school would feed into more than one school that's a 3-5? And because I mean, in Oklahoma City, some elementary schools don't track the whole way together. So that would be my question is.
Yeah, that is a good question. I only looked at the schools that are already less than 165 days, and the answer to that question for those schools is no. But I don't know about any school in the state that might want to move to less than 165 days. So it probably is worth looking at. The other question was, again, if this becomes a district decision, what if 4 out of the 5 schools in the district meet the criteria? Can the 5th get a waiver? And the answer is no. That right now, with the interpretation of the laws, this is a school-based decision, or school-based criteria that you bring to your local school board. And your local school board decides whether to submit a waiver or not. But it can only submit a waiver for the schools that have met the criteria. A waiver request, not a waiver. Okay, so those were two questions we left hanging at the end of last meeting.
Okay, before you go on, I think there's some questions. Go ahead.
No.
Do you want that to be the end of that discussion?
No. Okay. I mean, I just know that it is definitely, that eliminates that for most districts then. I mean, I feel like we have 4 sites, and if it's every single site has to be, really, we're looking at being above state average at every single site, So it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. And, you know, it'd be interesting to know what the legislators in the room feel about what their intent was. I know visiting with my legislator, you know, when he asked me to be a part of this, it was described to me as if you were really underperforming, that was going to be the reason, you know, they wanted to put this in place. So the minimum of 165 days to me is a whole different thing to look at. I won't argue one bit that the more time you go to school, probably the better off kids are going to be. But when we don't have, you know, the teacher pipeline too, and so then all these other things come into play, 4-day week versus 5-day week, we've seen some really positive things from the 4 days. But you're pretty much eliminating a lot of schools, I think, if you put it on by site, because it's impossible for one of our sites to go 4 days and another to go 5. You know, uh-huh. it really...
Okay, that's very interesting.
Puts that
so
into play.
So we'll continue to have more conversation about this, because I think we're going to show the impact data. So I think the answer on that was that it's school by school. Mm-hmm. So that you don't just simply say, because the majority of schools in a district were meeting the criteria, that everyone gets to. I guess that's the I think that's the converse of what we presented here. So it's school. We at the department have a different view about this than maybe some in the room. I would like to see local districts make that decision. If they want a school district that qualifies getting that opportunity, they can have that, in our opinion, as we read the law. But we do know that there are some who do not read the law that way and view it only as a district by district, all or nothing. And I think that giving more flexibility is important. Those four could, but not that one that doesn't qualify.
So what she's saying is that at the state level, they're not making this decision that you entire district has to go forward as one. That's a local decision. So if you have 4 out of 5 schools in your district, you choose as a district, I'm going to put forward those 4 while I'm working on my 5th, or I'm not going to put together any. I'm going to keep all 5 to schools, and I can't apply for a waiver for any.
But that's the local district's decision. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that there are others who don't think it's that way. I think we want to give as much flexibility, in my opinion. Okay. But it's up to you.
It needs to be district-wide. You're creating problems in transportation and a lot of other issues. That teachers that teach in different levels across the district, you're creating a lot of problems by making it site by site.
So
it needs to be district-wide what to do.
So I just want to ask you, then you would prefer that decision be made by the state?
I prefer it to be a district decision. I'd prefer to do
so
away with all
is.
Of this. If you want to ask what I prefer.
Then I think we are on this. We have the same view. Yeah, because we believe it should belong to local school boards to decide.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
But it still needs to be a district-wide decision.
Can that be a local district's choice to make it district-wide? What if you're Tulsa Public, you have 50, 60 schools,
that.
And you want one to be, but they can't? Because
well,
they have
there probably needs
or
to be some exceptions for the larger districts, but you're talking about majority of our districts are district wide, and there's a lot of transportation issues and teacher issues that you create by making it just one site that's eligible.
Okay, very interesting. All right, this is why we're having the group, because these are perspectives I didn't expect. So that's really really helpful.
What about if you have 9 elementaries? And maybe 8 qualify, but the 9th one does not, why not let the whole district go ahead and go with the 4-day a week and have a plan of action for the 1? So that way they can keep the district all together and everybody's on the same schedule, but have a plan for that site that did not meet that criteria.
I think that is actually what the superintendent is saying, that by leaving it as individual, by leaving it an individual school, the district has the opportunity to say, we want the whole district to go, or we only want the individual schools to go. If the state says that it has to be the district or nothing, it ties our hands to make a local decision. yeah, it makes it harder.
And I will show you the numbers. I do have these numbers.
But it does back certain sized districts into a corner where they can't choose that for their other sites because of the transportation, sharing teachers, kids going across, because some of my kids go to the high school to take classes out of the middle school if the middle school doesn't